Scott is back on the show. Great to see you, Scott. You just returned from Russia, and I just got to ask you. I mean, I was following your travels there on social media a little bit for a month. You know, everyone says, well, you know, Russia is being destroyed with sanctions. It's a shell of it for of its former self. I'm sure the grocery stores are empty. People are starving. Putin is dying of cancer. What is the truth? What did you see when you were in Russia?
Well, I can't address any issues pertaining to Vladimir Putin's health. I didn't meet him, so I don't right. know a lot.
He's got kidney failure. He's got there's a long list of things that apparently that you know the West loves to say that he's dying of. So, but, yeah,
you know, for a dying man, I would tell you his presence in Russia is very vigorous and vibrant. He travels a lot. He speaks a lot. He's a visible leader. So if this is what a dying man looks like, then I think Russians will want him to keep dying for a long time because he's alive and well and living and leading. And that's the important thing. He's leading. And the Russians recognize him as their leader. We speak of the war and the military aspects of this conflict, and I guess we'll touch on that in a second. But, you know, Clausewitz, Sun Tzu, and other famous military philosophers have all said something similar along the lines of war is an extension of politics by other means. And this war was never supposed to. This war, first of all, was provoked by the West. I think everybody needs to understand that. This was not a war that Russia wanted. Russia was provoked into this war. It's a provocation that's been going on since 1992. In 2008, the exact consequences of trying to invite NATO or Ukraine into NATO were set forth in writing by William Burns. He's the current CIA director, former U.S. ambassador. And he said straight up, if you invite Ukraine into NATO, you will set in motion events that will lead to a Russian military intervention. He wrote that in early 2008. In November 2008, Ukraine was invited. So the West has been provoking this military intervention for some time now. But the idea was that the military intervention would trigger sanctions that would destroy Russia. You see, it wasn't that the West was going to defeat Russia militarily or that Ukraine was going to defeat Russia. The idea was to hold Russia militarily until the economy collapsed and then create a sort of Moscow Maidan movement to replicating the 2014 coup d'etat that evicted Viktor Yanukovych. That was the goal. That was the objective. Newsflash, it has failed miserably. I arrived in Novosibirsk, the third largest city in Russia, the largest growing economy in Russia. There is so much investment taking place right now, foreign investment, internal investment. I don't think the people who planned the sanction campaign understand the reality of Russian economy. By sanctioning, for instance, the Russian oligarchs, and taking their money from them. One, it was one of the most welcome moves by the Russian people. They applauded the West for doing that because for decades, the Russian people and the Russian government had been angered by the flight of Russian capital out of Russia by these oligarchs who steal money from the Russians and then take it abroad. So the Russians applauded this. But by locking the Russian oligarch class out of Western investment possibilities, there are now literally a trillion dollars or plus of capital waiting to be invested. And these people have no choice but to invest it in Russia.
Wow.
And so they are pouring money into Russia. You know, a year ago during the pandemic, in the post-pandemic environment, The planners for Russian urban areas were looking for capital. They didn't have enough money. I mean, they were building, but there were so many projects to do, so they had to allocate their resources carefully. They're in a situation now where they don't know how to spend the money. There is so much money available right now that they are literally funding projects that otherwise would not have been funded. You can't go anywhere in a major urban environment in Russia without seeing cranes taking place, buildings going up, and these buildings are already allocated in terms of the workspace. Companies are flooding into Russia from around the world. Newsflash, America and the Europe. You ain't the only players in town. In fact, you're nobody compared to the rest of the world. The rest of the world, the global South, India, Pakistan, Iran, China are coming into Russia investing. There has been no pause whatsoever. Russia is accelerating right now. Russia is the healthiest it has been ever. In its entire history, Russia has never been this healthy economically. When I go around the United States, there's these little joke stickers, because Joe Biden, of course, is infamously, called everything that's happened wrong in America Putin's tax. Putin did this. Putin did that. Putin did that. And yet people mocked it because you get to the gas station, you have high Oprah, and there's these little stickers with Joe Biden saying, I did this, pointing at it.
Right.
I have to tell you that the standing joke right now in Russia is thank you, Joe Biden.
Wow.
Thank you, Joe Biden, because they are literally looking at it saying, do you not understand what you have done? You have made this economy, this Russian economy, so vibrant, so vigorous. Is it perfect? No, it's not a utopia. The Western media will always be able to go out and find little chinks in the armor and say, aha, what about this? What about that? What about this? Guys, you're missing the big picture. The big picture is Russia is alive, well, living, thriving. There are no empty shelves in Russia. No empty shelves in Russia. Prices in Russia are ridiculously low. When people say, Russia's GDP matches that of, Italy or whatever. Guys, you're missing the point. Purchasing power. The ruble because prices are so low and inflation so low, you get more bang with the ruble than you do with the buck. And so even though on paper it may not look like the Russians make as much money, what they're able to do with their money in terms of spending and quality of life is amazing. And then the other thing I will say is this. If you thought you were going to break the spirit of the Russian people, think again. One of the greatest gifts, the second greatest gift that the West gave was creating the condition where Vladimir Putin was compelled to partially mobilize, the 300,000 people that he mobilized back in September, set up panic through the non-believers. When I say non-believers, I mean the people that didn't support Putin, the Navalny supporters. Around 300,000, 400,000 of them fled Russia, much to the glee of the West. You know what Russia did? They opened the doors and said, go. And you literally got rid of all the empty baggage. All of the dead weight in Russian society is gone, and the Russians are ecstatic because they don't have to deal with these people who hate Putin, who hate Russia from their perspective. You ran away from your country when your country needed you. There are many people that I worked with in Russia during this trip who are not Putin supporters. I will tell you that straight up. They support Russia and Putin is the leader, so they're not going to turn their back on him, but they have questions. They have a lot of questions, and at some point in time, Putin will be called upon to answer these questions. But when Russia needed them, they are there, they stayed, they are loyal, they are patriotic, and that is the nation right now. They're not a bunch of chest-thumping USA, USA fake American patriots, sunshine soldiers who are patriotic, but they don't do anything. These are Russians who are stoic, and they are there. They are working. This is not a defeated nation. This is a nation that's in it for the long haul. And they have a vision that's far greater than anything anybody in the West has been able to articulate about what their vision towards Russia is. Russia is thinking beyond Ukraine. Ukraine is a big topic. Russia's working that issue. It's frustrating for many Russians that it's taken this long to solve the issue. But the Russians are also looking beyond Ukraine. They're looking towards a world where Russia is part of a multipolar community that the United States no longer directs. The United States is invited to the table, but the day and age of America telling people what to do is over, finished, and that's clear in Russia today.
Yeah, it's clear, of course, with the 30 new additional countries that want to join the BRICS nations as well. it's sunsetting on the U.S. dollar, as we've been covering here on this show. You were there then in Russia when that drone strike hit hit the Kremlin, hit the Capitol. Yep. At the time, of course, Zelensky came out, gave a speech, said we had nothing to do with that. The United States now says they did. Of course, we've been saying before that they don't do anything without NATO's supervision or involvement in any of this. So it was all a joke to begin with. And then overnight, or the past 48 hours, we've seen a swarm of drones hitting Moscow. They say, of course, that those Russian Ministry of Defense says they were all taken care of. A few of them hit residential buildings, though. So when you were there among the people and hearing their response, were they stunned that, oh my gosh, now Moscow is now under attack?
No. Look, the Russians know that they're at war. That strike on the Kremlin took place, I believe, on May 3rd, in the lead up to Victory Day. And let me just give you another thing. In America and in Europe, they sell Victory Day, May 9th, as some sort of Putin-generated propaganda exercise, where Red Square is filled with the loyalists and there's a lot of made-for-TV moments. Hey, ladies and gentlemen watching this show, Victory Day is real. It's a real Russian holiday, and it's a Russian holiday that resonates with every single Russian because 27 million Soviets died during World War II at the hands of Nazi Germany. There's not a family in Russia that didn't suffer the harshest possible consequences of that conflict. They look up, they look to the sky because they know in their hearts that their grandparents, their parents, their relatives are looking down on them, holding them to account for what they do in honor of the sacrifice that was made. This is part of the Russian soul. And that's the other thing I learned on this trip is, you know, in the West, we mock the Russian soul. We hear people say that. We dismiss it. It's real. It resonates. It defines Russia. It is who the Russian people are. So anybody who thought that you could launch a drone strike on Moscow on May 3rd and somehow panic the Russians into doing something, you know, on May 9th, the actual day of the parade, Moscow was struck, I believe, by 9 to 12 drones. You didn't hear about it, but it was there. The drone attack came in. The Russians shot down most of them. It's an issue. Are the Russians frustrated by this? Yes. Would they like perfect air defense? Yes. But these drones are slow. They're low flying. They're hard to detect. And they're just a mosquito bite. It's a propaganda exercise. But the Russians aren't losing sight. This is a nation that is committed to victory, not victory just in Ukraine, but victory against the collective West. And a handful of drone strikes are not going to change any aspect of that. What it has done is liberated the Russian leadership to start taking out what they call decision-making centers. And ask the Ukrainians how that feels. They just lost their military intelligence headquarters. They lost it. It's gone. Everybody in that building is dead. They will lose other decision-making centers as this, if these these strikes continue to escalate.
Do we know if NATO, this is, of course, we heard reports months ago of a major attacks after the last round of these style attacks where Putin launched on these decision-making centers, a bunker outside of Kiev, specifically being hit with NATO decision-makers in there. Do we know, are these just Ukrainians? Are they NATO as well? U.S. intelligence that we won't hear about that are also hitting these attacks? Anything you know about that?
Well, I think the number that was put out on the previous one, which I think took place near Lvov in western Ukraine, was 200 to 300. Now, that's just a ridiculously high number. If you take a look at the documents that were leaked by this airman in Massachusetts, the documents acknowledge that there are boots on the ground. Over, I think, 100 Americans are on the ground. Most of them rotate in and out of Ukraine. Many of them work out of the embassy. Is it possible that Americans or NATO designated personnel are in these bunkers? Yes, that is a possibility. But to put 200 to 300 is ridiculous. One, in this day and age of connectivity, real-time connectivity, you don't need to go through that risk. You can keep these people in Poland and maintain the connectivity with the Ukrainians without putting these people at risk. So while I do believe that there have been casualties and there are some credible reports coming out about casualties, I think the casualties that are taking place are on personnel that are providing critical logistics support. You know, billions of dollars of military equipment has been provided to the Ukrainians. This is a logistical nightmare, a maintenance nightmare, and an accounting nightmare. And so I think you have NATO resources pushed forward to support this logistical effort, not planning for the battle that's taking place outside of Ukraine. But there have to be people on the ground to assist Ukraine in dealing with the basically the mountain of logistical support requirements that have been accrued because of this. And I think these are the people that have suffered casualties. And I do believe that there have been dead, and I do believe there have been wounded on the part of active duty NATO personnel. Whether or not this includes Americans, I can't say.
Victoria Nuland last week admitted that for the past 4 to 5 months, the United States has been actively involved in the planning process of this counteroffensive. Despite New York Times reports, despite Politico reports that say they're frustrated because Ukraine just won't share any information about their spring offensive, their summer offensive, which we found laughable here on this show. And Victoria Nuland then confirmed that the United States, NATO, has been actively involved in this spring offensive planning for 4 to 5 months. She said this publicly. So where are we with this offensive? What do you think we're going to see as we see these little pinprick mosquito bite attacks and drone strike attacks right now? The pressure, of course, is on for this somehow counteroffensive. What do you think we're going to see?
Well, we know that the forces that were allocated for this offensive, and we know this not just from the leaked documents, but just because of public statements, 9 to 12 brigades worth of Ukrainian forces have been equipped and trained by NATO and their European non-NATO European allies since the fall of last year. And that these brigades are, by and large, ready on paper. But as I mentioned to you, these brigades have incorporated a sustainability nightmare. You have different kinds of tanks, different kinds of armored fighting vehicles, different kinds of artillery, all of which have their own logistical tails, each one is different. I will tell you this. If the United States tried to carry out an offensive operation using 12 brigades that were organized in this fashion with differing equipment and support, we couldn't do it. And we're the best army in the world. We couldn't do it. Now, we expect the Ukrainians somehow to be able to do this with troops that are not properly trained. They're not properly led. They're not properly motivated. We have taken them. It took me 2.5 years as a Marine working with the best people in the world, U.S. Marines, to master the art of combined arms maneuver warfare through nonstop live fire training in 29 Palms, California in the 1980s. And I will tell you that if we had ceased training for any period of time, 2 to 6 months, our effectiveness would have plummeted. You have to constantly train to maintain this skill set. We have taken select Ukrainian forces and run them through a very shortened, abbreviated training course in Germany on combined arms combat. It's a joke, literally a joke. No American soldier could go through that training and be considered combat capable. And yet we've taken the Ukrainians, we've married them up with this disparate set of equipment, and we're saying you must now carry out a counteroffensive against an army that defines itself by the defense. And that's Russia, the Russian army, the best defensive army in the world. And so if everything was going Ukraine's way, this counteroffensive would have no chance of ever succeeding. But everything's not going their way. The Russians have, over the course of the year, mastered their intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities, their satellites, their aircraft, their electronic warfare. They are tracking this material, and they are taking it out. All of the logistics support, the fuel, the ammunition, everything, spare parts that gets accumulated in warehouses, these warehouses are being taken out. The Ukrainians have zero capacity to carry out any meaningful counteroffensive, and it's been hampered even more by the battle for Bakhmut. The Russians killed 75,000 Ukrainians in this battle. I just want to make that number out there again so people understand what the heck just happened. 75,000 Ukrainian soldiers were killed. 60,000 of these soldiers represents the size of the Ukrainian counteroffensive force. So the 60,000 troops that NATO trained for this counteroffensive are no longer available for the counteroffensive, because 75,000 Ukrainians died in the Bakhmut area. These troops now have to fill that gap. There are no troops available for a meaningful counteroffensive. And if the Ukrainians attempt to do something, to pull forces out, to cobble together some sort of desperate attack, it won't even be Battle of the Bulge, like, because they won't get the penetration of the Russian lines. They'll be slaughtered before they get there. And then there's nothing left. And this is what the Ukrainian generals are trying to tell Zelensky right now, is stop playing politics with the lives of Ukrainian soldiers. You already did that in Bakhmut. We told you not to commit to this battle. 75,000 soldiers are dead. That's dead. That means about 150,000 are wounded. That's a lot of guys that are no longer available to be on the front lines fighting. Jeez. The Ukrainians are having trouble getting manpower. They're scooping old men. They're recruiting 16 and 17-year-olds. They're running around hijacking people off the streets. What do you think the motivation factor is of a man who thought he was going home to his family, getting hit, put in a car, thrown in 4 days later with no training, told you're going in the front line? You think he's ready to give his life for his country? He's going to, but he's not going to be able to give it in the way that the Ukrainians would like, with, you know, zeal and aggressiveness and going forward. He's going to give it cowering in a trench, saying, what the hell am I doing here? I don't know how to use this weapon. And the Russian artillery is raining down on me. The Ukrainians have no artillery ammunition left. Their air defense system is being destroyed as we speak. Two of the three Patriot systems that have been provided are gone, off the table, not there anymore. Jeez. That's happening to the totality of the Ukrainian air defense. This war is all but over. There's a lot of fighting left to be done. But anybody who's waiting for a magical Ukrainian counteroffensive to suddenly turn the table, just like sanctions, it ain't working, guys. Russia has won this. You know, we hear a lot of talk, you know, the Ukrainians, you know, they got new tanks. They didn't get any new tanks. The Challenger tanks provided by the British are old. The Leopard tanks provided by the Germans are old. You know what? The Russians right now are producing 100 advanced T-90 tanks a month. Wow. 100 a month. So while we're sitting here giving the Ukraine, we're scraping the barrel to give Ukrainians things. For instance, F-16 fighters, 40-year-old aircraft. They're not new. They're not good. They're junk. And the aircraft the Ukrainians are going to get are all airplanes that have lost their operational expiration date. The Dutch were pretty much honest about it. They said, oh, we'll give you F-16s, but only after we can't use them anymore because they've passed their use-by date. Right. Then we'll give them to you. So this is the Ukrainian military with all these so-called magic weapons, none of which work. The Russians, you know, everybody's saying, oh, they ran out of everything. They're not running out of anything. Their defense industry is mobilized. It's working. It's punching out stuff. They will never run out of missiles. They will never run out of artillery. They will never run out of tanks because, A, the Ukrainians aren't killing that many of them, and, B, they're just building more and more and more. It's not just for Ukraine. People forget that Putin signed an order expanding the total Russian army to 1.5 million people. Finland, that just joined NATO. Yeah, that's right, Finland. You got a 70,000-man Russian Army Corps being formed right now north of St. Petersburg. Fresh troops, fresh equipment, all because of you, Finland, because you decided to join NATO. They're going to be matched by another 30,000 up in the Kola Peninsula. That's 100,000 troops, Russian troops, that didn't exist before. They exist now, and they're equipped with the best equipment in the world. And that goes for the totality of the Russian perimeter. This war has made Russia stronger militarily, economically, and most importantly, domestically, politically. I've never seen the Russian people so unified over being Russian than I saw them today.
And these leaders in the West continue to play politics with these people's lives, and these poor people continue to be killed. And now you're pulling young men out of colleges and off the streets in order to, you know, in conscription and throwing them into the meat grinder. Unbelievable, unbelievable. And I guess thanks, Joe Biden. And put that sticker right there for making Russia right the there. Strongest it's ever been. Scott Ritter, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your insights and what you saw on this month-long trip to Russia. Really, really fascinating. Eye-opening, I hope, for a lot of our audience who really have no idea what's going on inside of Russia. Scott, thank you so much for your insights on this.
Thanks for having me. We'll be right back.